Good morning. It is just past 7:35 in the morning, and you're listening to Upfront on KPFA. I'm Antonia Yuhas.
And I'm Brian Edwards Teeger.
So we, on Friday, invited our guest who's about to join us to join us on the air for today's show. When we reached out to him, we wanted to discuss white nationalism and white extremism in the wake of the pipe bombs being sent, now 14 pipe bombs being sent to leading members of the Democratic Party and their financial supporters. Now the accused, Cesar Sayoc, is appearing in court today. And we had also learned of the Kroger shooting, which was first an attempted shooting at the First Baptist Church, a predominantly black church, where the accused Gregory Bush could not get into the church and then went on to a Kroger supermarket shooting and killing two black people, a black man and a black woman, reportedly walking by a white man and saying to him, "Whites, do not kill whites." Then, over the course of the weekend, of course, our need to have this discussion dramatically intensified with the mass shooting that occurred at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh on Saturday, reported by the Anti-Defamation League as likely the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in U.S. history, with 11 Sabbath attendees being murdered, and the accused is Robert Bowers. There is a lot to talk about here, a lot to discuss, and fortunately, our guest is the right person to have that discussion with. And we are joined by Professor Stephen Gardner. He's a senior research analyst at Political Research Associates, which produces investigative research and analysis on the U.S. right. That work is done to support social justice advocates and defend human rights. For the better part of more than 20 years, he's been doing this research, and we are happy to have you with us this morning. Thank you for being with us, Stephen Gardner.
Thank you, Antonio. It's such a pleasure to be here at this time that when we're all feeling like we need to try to grapple with what's going on in our world.
So, you know, I noted that on Thursday, on October 25th, you wrote an article, and it was your initial response to the pipe bombs. And that article was entitled "The Violent Consequences of Anti-Semitic Bigotry." And you were starting your discussion because this is now, it's amazing that it's only been 1 week. So it's 1 week ago that the first pipe bomb was found at in a mailbox outside the home of George Soros in New York. And this, of course, was the first of what have now since been identified as 14, at least 14 pipe bombs. Those targets, as I said, leading members of the Democratic Party, including, as has come out now, a large number of black members of Congress, two pipe bombs, one sent to the LA and one to the DC office of Congresswoman Maxine Waters, also Kamala Harris, also Cory Booker. But this began with a pipe bomb outside the home of George Soros. Can you talk about the piece that you wrote and why you chose to focus at that time on that first pipe bomb arrived at the home of Soros's house?
Okay, so first I will say that I was focusing on Soros at that moment, not because there's trying to create some kind of hierarchy of potential victims in any of this. That's not the point. The point is that there's a system of understanding in the American far right about the ways in which politics as a whole works. And for a certain segment that of the white nationalist movement in this country, anti-Jewish bigotry, anti-Semitism is sort of the center of that, because Jews are seen as, and this is very explicit in their writings, as the sort of the master understanding, because Jews control things. So it's not that black and brown folk are going to be victims here. Of course they will. So will other folks, trans folks, for example. It's not that liberal politicians can't be targeted in this, because Jews are seen as the master manipulators of all of these populations. And this is not necessarily, of course, a widespread belief. It doesn't need to be, but there are numerous euphemisms and dog whistles and ways of activating that latent anti-Semitic bigotry in parts of the population. And this is why I wrote that article. And this is what many of us who study the far right have been feeling for months now, and in fact trying to organize inside and outside of the Jewish community to say, it may seem like Jews are not vulnerable in this country, but it's not true. And we've been, in fact, living under kind of a cloud of dread about what could happen.
Well, and please just expand on that, because I think, you know, that there is something very important to unpack here about the language that Donald Trump has been using over the last since his election and before it as well, but obviously most prominently since his election. Obviously, the events in Charlottesville and the interrelationship of attacks of white supremacy having an interrelationship of attacks on black people, on Jews, and which is also what we've seen unfold profoundly in the last 1 week.
Yeah, absolutely. These are interwoven attacks, and it's not a simple formula, so it has to be unpacked. So, we're seeing now a lot of pushback from conservative and sort of ordinary right-wing folks about, oh, you can't really say that heated rhetoric causes violence, because heated rhetoric is on all sides. We're not talking about heated rhetoric. We're talking about a case where there's underlying bigotry. Without that underlying bigotry of anti-Semitism, of anti-black racism, of xenophobia, then you can't activate it. It's not the same as yelling at your political rival that you don't like what they're doing or that you think it's going in the completely wrong direction. So you have the underlying bigotry, and then you have an increasingly polarized political situation. Now, I want to emphasize President Trump, for all that he is riding the wave of that polarization, did not cause it. A variety of far-right political movements, including the anti-immigrant movement, including white nationalists, including components of the Christian right, have been demonizing portions of the population, black folk, LGBTQ folk, immigrants and refugees, and Jews, either openly or in coded language, for years now, going back at least to the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombing in the 1990s, when there was sort of a downtake for a moment in all of this rhetoric, but with first during the Bush administration and then even more during the Obama administration, this has been escalating year after year. And with the election of President Trump and his campaign, more and more division and polarization, where our political rivals become not just our opponents, not just people whom we disagree with or disagree with profoundly, they become the enemy. They become, in the rhetoric of President Trump, frankly, and of many of his followers, sort of an existential enemy, a threat to our existence. So we hear enemy of the people, treason, wild mobs, this kind of talk that's completely disconnected from reality. And then finally, third component. So first, just to go back a little bit, first you have the underlying bigotry. Secondly, you have the polarization. Then you have the relentless calls, the demagoguery, these are enemies. These people are dangerous. And what we've seen in particular here in this case is a focus on a few individuals who, quote unquote, just happen to be Jewish. Well, this is not an accident. And it makes absolutely no difference if the intent of the president or his people who are close to him were consciously anti-Semitic. He was activating a very well understood underlying bigotry. The consequences were going to be we're going to be violent eventually. No one can say how or when. I mean, we're not people who do this kind of work are not prognosticators, but it's clear that that's going to happen. And then the violence against Black people and against immigrants, this is constant. This is part of the ongoing polarization. Happens every day. And then within that context, of course, we see at the same time the shift in policies to create a situation that doesn't just demonize, say, immigrants, but use the power of the state to crack down on their lives.
Well, and also, obviously, since the caravan began, President Trump has used incredibly angry and heated rhetoric against the caravan, and not only threatening, but now actually sending troops down to the U.S. border, even though, of course, the caravan is not anywhere near at this point the United States border, to stop them. He has definitely used this, obviously, as a campaign issue, with immigration being the number one issue by far, rated by Republicans as the issue they see of most concern right now, and Trump using the caravan as a heated political tool. And Robert Bowers, the reported shooter at the Tree of Life Synagogue, reportedly saying in his social media that he has felt that Trump has not gone far enough, being limited, in his words, by the Jews, by the influence of Jews, to stop immigration, and that Bowers would to stop the flow of immigrants, and that Bowers would essentially take that into his own hands. But so the Anti-Defamation League has said that in 2017, incidents against Jews increased by nearly 60% over the numbers in 2016. And you said at the beginning that you and many of you who study these issues were fearful that this was coming. I think many of us may remember right when Trump was elected, we started seeing the spray painting on synagogues, anti-Jewish statements being spray painted on synagogues. And just in the last week or so, Trump has been using increasingly heated language. Can you talk about the terminology that Trump has been embracing at his rallies, referring very specifically to himself as a nationalist, and rhetoric that he has been using, but increasingly so, against globalists, and what these terms mean on the right in particular?
Yeah, well, these are, I mean, when Trump comes and says he's a nationalist, I am a nationalist, I'm not supposed to use that word, but I'm a nationalist, hear the word, I'm a nationalist. When he comes to a rally and says this, he is responding to pressure from his base. In fact, Steve Bannon for years was trying to get him to say this out loud and applauded him after he did it. He's sending out to his base a message that, not I love this country, not this is where I live and it's important to me. He's sending a very specific message to those who will hear, which is, I think our country is under attack from a human wave of brown people coming to this country who are threatening the cultural and genetic makeup of our people, meaning white people. And that is the explicit message that is heard by people like by Robert Bowers, who is, of course, a critic of the president, very common on the insurgent right, on the extreme of the far right, heard by them in a very particular way. But more than that, it's heard by lots of people. When you say, I am a nationalist, there's a baked in de facto understanding of what a real American is. And recent immigrants from Latin America or from the Middle East don't count as real Americans in their imagination. They don't want them here. They see them as a threat to their survival. It's sometimes described as quote unquote white genocide, which is the idea that there's some magic whiteness that's going to be undermined and done away with. Well, I mean, you don't done away with, not by killing white people, but by changing the character of our culture by welcoming people who didn't happen to originate in Europe. I mean, basically, that's a definition of racism.
And this is also a nod to Nazism, of course. And Trump has also said at his speech before the United Nations, he was very clear that he referred to himself, "I am not an internationalist. I am a patriot." He said that over and over again, the reference to the words of patriotism resounding quite profoundly as well. And then his statements that he is not a globalist and references to those who are globalists. So can you talk about that word being an anti-globalist?
This is one of a series of code words for which we should read the Jews. The Jews as kind of a metaphor, an idea of this sort of global metaphysical evil that's out to destroy white civilization. So he, at a rally, he says, I'm not a globalist, and his followers chant George Soros, and then they start chanting lock him up, and Trump eggs them on. I mean, this is not subtle. President Trump, the best we can say is he doesn't understand how anti-Semitism works. The worst we could probably say is that he doesn't care. This is a man with three Jewish grandchildren. I mean, this is a level of cluelessness at best that is quite astonishing. But again, we don't have to get into whether he's the ultimate cause or what is in his heart. It sort of doesn't matter. He is, and I would say this part is intentional, he is creating a situation where his followers are, they're tending to, some of them are going to engage in violence. Many of them are simply going to engage in an ever-escalating intervention in the political scene, angry, yelling, treating people as the enemy. And enemies threaten your existence. What do you do with enemies?
And as I think it doesn't matter at this point whether, and we can't see into Donald Trump's heart if he is an anti-Semite or not. He is clearly using this rhetoric, it seems to me, as at a minimum, a political tool. And also, it seems as a tool of narcissism. I think he loves getting those big hurrahs at his rallies. He likes being the man who is getting the cheers and the applause. And also, there's obviously a very clear political agenda here. As you said, this began with his political supporters trying to get him to use this language more aggressively. He uses it to jimmy up his base, which it does. And we are in the midterms. Let's not forget that is 1 week before a very important political election, and he is using this language. Also, at rallies, he's going to very specific places. He is avoiding urban centers. He is going to places where he has supporters to get them to the polls. And either he cares not or cares little that jimmying is not just about voting or getting out politically. It also has, and has for several years now, had violent repercussions.
And I would add to that, I would agree with everything that you just said, and add to it that again, we see people complaining about an equivalence between the heated rhetoric coming from the president and, say, the heated rhetoric coming from one of his critics in Congress. I don't think this is actually we should imagine this is primarily a partisan issue. This is not partisan violence. This is violence and rhetoric directed against people of various categories: Jews, Black people, immigrants, refugees. But there's no equivalence between those two things. Donald Trump is supposed to be the president of the United States, speaking for all Americans. He is supposed to be the person who holds within his office, by design, the message of our country. And he spends all of his time, regardless of his intentions, he spends all of his time whipping up his base and caring little for the consequences. And I will also say that he may think he is in charge of all of this, but history is replete with situations of leaders who have sort of let the xenophobic racist tiger out of the cage, and they don't then have any control over what's going to happen. We don't know how much violence there will be once it starts going. That's one potential. The other potential is when we have things like the alleged pipe bomber Sayoc and the shooter in Pittsburgh, Bowers, alleged in both cases, but the natural tendency of everyone, not just his Trump supporters, is to want more safety. More safety often means people calling for more policing, more surveillance, more militarization of the state apparatus, more crackdown, more extreme sentencing. Well, I mean, this is something that's very difficult for any politician to speak out against, but I'm not sure how that is going to do anything but to degrade our political culture even further. And ultimately, even if we're looking at cracking down on violent white nationalists, the reality is when you increase policing, the primary victims are going to be people of color. I mean, this is just baked again into the way our system works structurally.
But if you don't have this state prosecuting and imprisoning violent right-wing extremists, how do you respond? I mean, isn't it useful and appropriate that over the course of the past week, the FBI has been rounding up members of this right-wing fight club, the Rise Above movement?
Well, I'm not going to say that there's never a case when you want effective policing on these issues. I mean, getting the FBI, getting policing agencies to take these organizations on the right seriously, to not be as is sometimes said, blind in the right eye, unwilling to take right-wing violence and threats of violence seriously. This is important, but the larger call towards making us safer with more surveillance, more infiltration, more militarization of policing is fundamentally dangerous. And again, who would be doing that? Which Justice Department, which president are we talking about under whom that's going to happen?
Well, yeah, I think the calls that have come out from particularly from religious leaders, Muslim leaders, Christian leaders, Jewish leaders in the last several days, which has also been coming out for many years, is the solidarity is the answer, that we need to come together in solidarity as communities, as people who are opposed to violence, are opposed to autocratic leadership of the president to bring security through solidarity. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the direction of the FBI and our national looking at terrorism has been looking at terrorism from abroad since 9/11, as opposed to the predominant and for not only currently, but historically, the predominant perpetrators of domestic terrorism in the United States are white nationalists, are men like the three men who have perpetrated or been accused of perpetrating the crimes in the last week, and that insufficient attention has been focused on white nationalist domestic hate groups.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not an accident. The way this has happened, there's been enormous political pressure from the right to over decades now to define who the enemies of the United States are, and those enemies are predominantly thought of as either foreigners, Muslims in particular, most recently since the end of the Cold War, or as domestically we see, you know, these disproportionate policing in local levels that focuses on, for example, African American communities and defined there not as terrorists but as the innately criminal class from this imagined right wing perspective. And this is not speculative. This is, you can see this easily year by year in the arrest statistics, and you can see it year by year in the way our budgets get allocated for fighting terrorism, quote unquote.
I'm afraid that's where we're going to have to leave it. I also need to make a correction. I'm reminded of that Cesar Sayoc's father is reportedly was an immigrant from the Philippines, just to make that correction. And thank you very much. Our guest, Professor Stephen Gardner, is a senior research analyst at Political Research Associates, which produces investigative research and analysis on the U.S. right. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.